Economic Alliance presents the Gulf Coast Growth Show, your show for the coast with the most growth, with your host, Jason Lee and Clint Aiken.
All right, welcome to the Gulf Coast Growth Show. I'm your host, Jason Lee, and this...
I'm Clint Aiken, and this is your show for the coast with the most growth.
There we go, and we were with Bruce Mann from Port Houston, and we are here to talk about all things... involving planes, trains, and automobiles, right? So transportation here in our region, and it's going to be an exciting show. We're talking about rail, how freight gets around, and ultimately its economic impact in our region, so some of the best dynamics, and we have one of the best. I think he was on last year's GCIF panel. Who's up here to talk specifically about how that impacts us. So we're going to dive into the topic here in a moment, but first we want to hand it over to Bruce to kind of introduce himself, tell us about his role, even his experience and what led him to this role, and so our audience understands why he's here in front of us today.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. So Bruce Mann, the Director of Freight Mobility for Port Houston, which is just a fancy way of saying I make sure stuff moves. So road and rail and sometimes water, but primarily road and rail. I've been in Houston now for 18 years. I started in the transportation industry back in 1998, working for CSX Railroad in Jacksonville. And I actually used to do consulting for one of the companies here, Sasol.
Oh, wow.
While I was working for CSX in Jacksonville, and one day they called me up and said, hey, what do you think about Houston? I'm like, well, it's big and it's hot. And 2 weeks later, I was here. So the rest is history. But now I've been working in the freight industry for a long time, and really in plastics and resin for most of the last 18 years, and now the last 4 or 5 years for the port. And we're still moving resin and plastic.
Right.
So, and a lot of other things. You know, it just follows me. but it's great. You know, the port is the economic engine of our region, of our state. And it's great working for the port. When I first moved to Houston, I didn't even know there was a port. And I think it's interesting because I think most people in Houston don't realize it because it's kind of hidden over here on the east side of town. And, I think there was a movie called A Day in a Life Without a Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
They ought to have a movie called A Day in a Life Without the Port. Because if you think about the impact of the port in this region, there's no planes, there's no trains, there's no automobiles,
right.
There's no food in the grocery store, there's no clothes, there's nothing.
Right.
And, it's huge for our region. When you think about, Hurricane Harvey as an example, the port was down for about 5 days. Actually, we were ready to go back up, but the infrastructure around the port took some time to get up, but... they were talking about running out of aviation fuel and refined products, and you take the port out, you take the country.
Right.
It's, they're pretty quick, one after the other. So
wow.
It's amazing the impact that it has, and it's been an eye-opening experience for me, really realizing that this little channel out here generates as much activity as it does. It's about 20% of the... equivalent of 20% of the economic activity of the state and about half of just the 8-county region.
Oh my gosh. It's unbelievable.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think we're going to talk a little bit about all the workings behind that today. So I'm really excited to learn that. I'm always intrigued by the different minds that we have that come on the show. Cause I remember we had a previous show where we were at the port, we went over, I can't remember. Captain Bill Dill.
Yeah.
And he just put, just in one day, their little, logistics thing for all the ships in and out. And I wanted to, go home and take a nap afterwards. I was like, that's so much information. I would hate that. And then, so I'm imagining what kind of mind has to be able to deal with all this at the level that you do it. I mean, so do you have a background in transportation, logistics? Is that where you came from? Or?
Well, it's funny how everything kind of comes together. So when I was in undergrad, I actually was a campaign manager for a U.S. congressional race. So you got this political background. I was in the Navy for a few years, so you've kind of got this Marine background. And then you go work for a railroad, so all of a sudden you've kind of got this toolbox of skills. And, you know, you bring them all together and bam, here you are. So, and having worked for, certainly for some of the resin manufacturers, INEOS, Sasol is huge because it really helps you understand these big global complex supply chains. And if you look at, you know, the growth that's happened in the last few years because of shale, it's a lot of it's around resins and, you know, our volume's just going crazy.
Wow.
And we are the resin export facility. It comes out of Houston, the vast majority of it. And so having that background and really understanding how resins move, how plastics move, and then coming to the port, it's just been great.
So that's unbelievable.
It really equipped me to kind of walk into this day, this job day one, and be effective because I understood how everything moved outside of the port.
Right.
And then it's just tying the port to it.
So. Oh, that's amazing. So let's talk about tying the port to it. And really here in our city, tell us a little bit about freight mobility and how that works.
So, you know, that's, if anybody's been in Houston very long, they know that stuff stops. Most of the time, because it's just, there's construction on I-45, which never ends, but seriously, though, it's really about how does freight move in and out of the region. When you talk about the Port of Houston, if you look at deep draft ship calls, you know, everybody thinks L.A. Long Beach is big, but if you take L.A., Long Beach, Newark, New Jersey, and New York combined, they have about as many deep draft ship calls as the Port of Houston. So that just the economic activity that happens here between the oil, we are the energy port. There are some other folks that try to say they are, but it all happens here. I think in a couple of years, once a couple of more of these petrochemical facilities get built, we will be the largest petrochemical complex in the world.
Wow.
And we're number two now and catching up pretty quick behind Rotterdam. And, you know, it's really trying to figure out how does this stuff move? It's road, it's rail coming in, it's barges and ships going out, it's barges and ships, and really understanding, you know, what's the infrastructure that supports the movement of that. Anybody that lives in this area, especially on the east side of town, knows it's 225 and 146, I-10. We'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but Grand Parkway is going to be huge for our region.
Oh, wow.
Really getting the connectivity up to 45, up heading towards Dallas. But, you know, freight moves everywhere. You know, if you've been in Houston very long, I don't care where you go, there's semi-trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Even Grand Parkway, when it first opened up on the west side of town, it used to be just cars. But you look at that thing today, and there's a lot of trucks moving up and down Grand Parkway. So it's just the movement of goods through our region. And 80% of what comes into the port, containers, comes into the port. Most of it stays here just to support the population that we have here.
And I think as frustrated as we can get sometimes about projects, it's important to understand in order for these, for big players to come into our region, they have to know that we have a vested interest in transportation.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Whenever people are bidding for where they're going to put their next big site, right? Their next, you know, I know Exxon came out, and I know we even lost the opportunity. I think, was it Amazon? Who is it that picked up a one?
Amazon.
Yeah. So those were some huge things from a job perspective that, you know, we can facilitate, which always boils down to is, can we get in and can we get our stuff out?
Yeah.
And what do the logistics look like? So, and I guess you're the one who fixes all that. So that's fantastic.
Well, I don't know if I fixed it.
No pressure.
He's got a magic wand. It's all done.
No, I think, you know, the position I have at the port is actually kind of unique. Most other ports don't have that. I think we might have been maybe one of the first ports, if not the first port in the U.S., to have this position. Because I think it's important to understand that we can go invest $1 billion in our infrastructure, but if it hits the gate and can't go anywhere, we didn't do anything. So wow. It's really making sure the stuff can move because, you know, we're literally investing about $1 billion in our container terminals over a 10-year window. And
wow.
If you're not investing or making sure that people are investing in the freight network, you didn't do anything. And the goods, that come here today come here because we're a low-cost supply chain. Mm-hmm. And we've got to make sure that we stay ahead of it and that we're investing in the freight network and keeping that low cost. Because if we don't, it'll end up somewhere else. And that's a real impact. That's jobs. That's economic impact. And we need to make sure as a region that we're continuing to invest in the freight network. That's one of the things that makes Texas great. You know, I saw this stat the other day. Just the miles, the interstate miles of I-10 alone in Texas, not 45, not 20, not all the rest, just I-10. There's more interstate miles of I-10 than an individual cumulative miles of interstate systems in like 26 states.
That's insane. That's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Go Texas.
Yeah. Everything's bigger in Texas.
No, straight up. Even your road systems are small. You know, they're weak. We have one road that's bigger than all the roads of your little town.
Or state, yeah.
So, yeah. Now, I know that one of the things that's always kind of blows my mind is, and I saw a lot of this during Harvey was, after Harvey, and then that first year were all the different organizations, governing bodies that were positioning for money here, money there. And so I know that you have to bring different organizations together regionally to support the TxDOT, Harris County. There's a bunch of different, you know, organizations that have to fight for what, you know, I always use the term, what fix first has the most impact.
Right.
But then everybody else seems to have an opinion on what fix first has the most impact. How do you mitigate that, or how do you navigate those, you know, for lack of a better term, waters, right, yeah, to get that to a place where really we fix
That's
what
a
has the most?
Question. I'm impressed.
I'd love to hear about that.
Next question.
Okay.
No, you know, and Chad really helped out here with the Economic Alliance when I first came into the role. You know, I think one of the things that we identified pretty quickly is the question of what's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a regional perspective, if you're in the port region, what do we need to invest in? Where are the bottlenecks? What needs to be fixed? And then trying to get a coalition of folks together, all holding hands, singing kumbaya, and heading in the same direction. So as hard as it might have been, it was kind of like herding cats a little bit sometimes. You know, we got all the mayors of the region here, the county, Judge Emmett was involved, ECMA, East Harris County Manufacturing Association, the port, the Economic Alliance, and I'm probably forgetting some folks, but we all sat down in this room here, actually, and hammered out, here's the list.
Wow.
And we actually prioritized it, high priority, short term, medium priority, medium term, or low priority, long term. And we've got a list of 32 projects, and we've been chipping away at the list. So it really kind of set the roadmap for how do we do this and what's important for the port. And Quincy Allen, the district engineer for TxDOT, was in that one of those first meetings. And we started talking about the importance of 225. And he's like, hey, we should do a study. So this fall, TxDOT's going to kick off a planning, environmental, and linkage study for 225 to really start taking a look at what is the 225 of the future going to look like.
Wow.
And that came out of this process. So it was a great process, and everybody's singing from the same sheet of music now, which has really made this impactful. And it was probably, you know, sometimes you're just lucky, and, it was dumb luck, and I'm like, hey, we should do this. And I drafted Chad to help me.
I told you he had a magic wand.
This guy's amazing.
So we've been really fortunate to really take that time on the front end and get everybody in agreement and heading in the same direction.
You better hope my wife doesn't hear this episode, because she's going to show up at your office with my honey-do list. Because you could, like, get billions of dollars in order, and she's going to be like, can you please get this guy to clean the garage? It's been on the list for a year and a half. That's amazing, and it's really, again, a testament to not only this organization, because I think I get to experience it often because I'm engaged in the organization, but I know for our audience, they don't really know what's happening behind the scenes, the amount of work that this not only this organization, but you mentioned several, they all collectively come together.
Right? Yeah, and I forgot Harris County.
Hey, there you go, Harris County.
Because we've all worked together, and we've got great partners, and we all understand the importance of the economic engine.
I think it's interesting, too, is, you know, just to put it on the everyday driver commuter level, right? You know, we send traffic. It's Houston. There's traffic. Mm-hmm. How much worse would it be if you weren't doing what you were doing? And that's what most people don't realize. You know, yes, there's congestion, but we're not L.A., right? You're not sitting on a freeway for 2 hours trying to go 5 miles.
Right.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I'm from Pearland. Frankly, it's, you know, depending on if I can time myself right, I'm 20 to 30 minutes away from just about everything. You know, the Woodlands and Galveston, that were places that I go that take me about an hour. Yeah. But Spring, 290, Pasadena, Lake City, Katy, Sugar Land, I can be out in all those places in 30 minutes, which is pretty amazing when it comes to our road work and the systems that have taken place. Even just back from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, no, that didn't even exist. And now I'm like, what? 99? Shoot, I'm up there in a heartbeat. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, most people don't understand, like, how big Houston is.
Oh, gosh.
Geographically, right?
Yeah.
And I was born in Hawaii, and the example I would use is, imagine living inside the Beltway, and if you had to go outside the Beltway, you had to jump on a plane for 6 hours. Because the island I grew up in fits inside the Beltway.
Oh, my God.
Right? And the whole Northeast U.S. fits inside the Beltway.
Right.
Maybe not the whole Northeast, but it's kind of the point, though. I mean, when you look at what's just inside the Grand Parkway, that's a huge geographic area.
Right.
And we kind of lose perspective sometimes, right?
I was like it when I would get calls when I was a job seeker, and I get calls from people, oh, yeah, there's this job in Houston. I'm like, which part? And
exactly. They're
like, what does that matter? I'm like, you understand the geographical area of Houston. It can take 2 hours to get from one side to the other, right? You know, it's not, if I'm going from Baytown to Sugar Land, that could be an hour and a half commute, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, so which part of Houston? It is important, and if you don't know, get them out.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Pack a lunch. It's going to take a while.
Anytime I have family that's trying to move to Houston, and they're you know, everybody's got families, and you got the good side, the bad, you know, and they're like, hey, where should we live? I'm like, you know, just depending on what side they are, I'm like, no, you should definitely check out that neighborhood, because it's amazing and it's booming. They're like, we move. We should see each other all the time. I'm like, yeah, now you're 3 hours from me. You're the same distance as you were when you lived in Wyoming, so we're good. Yeah,
that's even without traffic sometimes. Right? I mean, just to go from Cypress to Lake City without traffic is an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is massive.
And even an hour is good when you consider the mileage, considering our road systems. And again, it's a testament to the great work that's happening. But we did talk a second ago about Grand Parkway. Mm-hmm. And so I think I chimed in. I probably stole a little thunder, but we were right on it. And specifically to that roadway and the work that's happening inside of that, you know, I've watched it systematically take place. I think it started in Katy, right? And then it's kind of worked its way over to the Woodlands, and it's working its way around. Tell us more about that system.
I love it because it's out the backside of my house. So,
I live off Raverton 99. I mean, it's great because I can hop just about anywhere very quickly.
Now, it's great because, you know, it used to take me to go from Cypress up to the Woodlands. It was at least an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can get from my house to the Woodlands in like 35 minutes.
Amazing.
So, but, you know, you start thinking about they're going to develop, and they've started, segments H and I kind of on the northeast side of town going up from I-10 to 59, right? So you think about what that's going to do for our region, right? Because most of the property that's around the port is full. You know, mm-hmm. It's sold. There's stuff on it. So, you know, where's the growth that's going to happen in the port region? Well, it's kind of going to happen along segments H and I of Grand Parkway. So that's going to be an economic engine for this region as we go forward. And it's going to really, I think, have a lot of growth for the port, warehousing, distribution.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be right on Grand Parkway. You're going to be able to get anywhere around town.
So we have people listening who maybe understand roughly what you're talking about. Can you talk about maybe some of the cities that are right on that corridor?
Well, it doesn't exist today, right? They haven't built it. But if you go, if you think about 59 heading north, right? And I've been in Texas for 18 years, but I still struggle with my geography.
Right.
So, you know, 59 and Grand Parkway kind of tied together right in that area.
Oh, cool. Right.
And then it's going to, segments H and I will come around and come down to I-10. So Mount Bellevue, Baytown.
Right.
So and all then,
those smaller towns like Crosby and
Exactly.
And those type of communities, they're actually going to see more growth opportunities once that's expanded out.
Mm. No, exactly. And I think HGAC, Houston-Galveston Area Council, the municipal planning organization for our region, did a study about the economic impact of Grand Parkway and just the amount of activity that happens within 3 miles of Grand Parkway, and it's in the billions.
Oh, my God.
And that's what's built, not to mention what's coming, right? And then you start looking at kind of the south end of it and really trying to make this ring road around all of Houston. You know, it's important. And it's that's amazing. Just what they've built today, right? Like, if you go out towards me and Cypress and Katy, they already need to expand it wider already. And they just built this thing a few years ago.
It's crazy.
So, but I, you know, it just indicates what's happening in this region, the population growth. And as this population growth goes, freight grows, you know, and we got to get all the stuff there, right? Like the tomatoes don't just show up in the grocery store.
Yeah.
They got to come from somewhere, right? And the bananas and the, and everything else that's in there, right?
That's amazing.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
So if you, he said there are cities that don't even exist yet, which means somebody owns that land, they're probably going to do pretty well. And if you're listening to the show, I've got a great idea for, it's a city called Jason Land. So we can talk afterwards, just message me directly. We'll bring a huge economic impact to Jason Land. It'll be amazing. So as long as I get to be the mayor. So.
Is there any economic incentives there?
Yeah. I have all kinds of incentives. I know people.
All right.
Yeah. that's a great transition to our commercial break. So we'll take a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we'll talk about some great events and big things that are happening with your organization. So we'll talk to you guys in a minute.
McCarthy Building Companies. From the Museum of Fine Arts to terminals on the Ship Channel, we understand the challenges and complexities you face when building here in the Gulf Coast. As the oldest privately held national construction company in the country, we have a clear focus on clients, community, and collaboration.
Welcome back. We really appreciate our sponsors. Couldn't do it without them, so thank you for tuning in. So we're going to kind of jump into our next topic, and you know, you have a lot of big news. We always have notes before the show, so we know what to talk about. And this is probably the largest section I've ever seen under big news, which is great because that means there's a lot of good things coming. So you want to kind of just walk us through some of these different things that are coming?
Yeah, and I think it's really all the same subject, and it's about the channel. And I think the Houston Ship Channel is probably the most important piece of infrastructure in the country. The energy and the import-export boom of the region is really driving the need to widen and deepen the channel faster and sooner. You're talking about a project that's probably close to around $1 billion in cost, but when you look at the economic impact of the ship channel and the port, it's millions of jobs. Nationwide, it's about 3 million jobs, $800 billion in economic value. So, you know, you're 800 to one.
Right.
That's kind of a no-brainer. Good
ROI.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like I said, it's 20% of the Texas economy. So the state comptroller, Mr. Hagar, said, you know, the port is the economic engine of the state of Texas. So it's important that we really make it a priority. It's certainly a priority for our organization, widening and deepening the channel. We're working with the Army Corps of Engineers and our industry partners to make it happen. It's the number one priority for the port, and really it ought to be the number one priority for our region because it's so important.
I keep hearing the term, really, two-way traffic. I think that's the key. The signature term is we have to be able to get more of that. And I think that one of the bigger shifts was maybe a change in the size of some of the big tankers or some of the big ships. So there's been almost like a modification. These things are already big, and then they've gotten bigger.
Well, you know, I think.
Or is it volume, or is it accommodation?
I don't want to get ahead of my skis here.
Cool.
So
okay.
I'll just say this, that it's important that we get it wider, deeper, because we want to have safe commerce in the ship channel.
Gotcha.
And it's important that not only is it safe, but that we continue to protect the economic engine of the state, right?
So right.
One key step is going to be getting this project authorized by Congress. The Texas delegation is fully behind this. They understand the importance of it. And this is why I kind of don't want to get into that. There's a lot of moving pieces and parts.
Oh, got it.
But fortunately, we're all together. We all agree that, hey, the channel needs to be wider. It needs to be deeper. If anybody's interested in, you know, what is this? What are we doing? They can go to widenthehoustonshipchannel.com and it'll probably have some information that I've forgotten or need to talk about. And a lot of the importance of the economic part of the ship channel is there. But that's really, when you start talking about the news of the port, that's the news. We continue to grow year over year. We continue to build our asset ahead of the need. So when, you know, other ports have issues and all of a sudden this volume shows up in Houston, we're ready to handle it.
I love it.
And it's been great for our region. We've gotten, you know, different distribution centers that have located here because we were ready. And that's one of our, you know, mottos is we're ready. So at Port Houston, we're ready. And we're ready to go get this thing wider and deeper. And with the help of our partners in the Corps and the federal legislature, we'll get an authorized project and we'll get this thing going.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah. How did y'all come up with a name for the website? So easy. Widenthehoustonshipchannel.com, in case you didn't catch that. And you want to learn more about it, you can. And before we took our break, we were talking about the collaboration that was involved and just everything that you're doing. And I don't think people realize how involved the Army Corps actually gets involved with a lot of the engineering that does go on. But I think it's pretty awesome that y'all are getting them engaged. People don't understand the legislation that's required. So when you do vote, it's important to know who you're voting for and how they stand on some of these issues, because it does develop our local economy. It affects jobs for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're in IT, accounting, medical, you know, if we don't have the growth, those areas can't grow either.
Absolutely. I think I saw a report a couple of years ago that said if you looked at transportation generally in the state of Texas and everything that's tied to transportation, it's about 7 million jobs in the state of Texas, which is about 25% of all the jobs.
Right.
So, you know, moving stuff is a big thing. And whether it's on the water or on the road, it's important that we all work together and we understand who's trying to keep the cash register going.
Right.
I like full cash registers.
Right.
So I think we're all in agreement there.
I think that's one of the charters for Jason Land.
Huh?
Full cash register,
yeah. Tons of tax abatement. That's how we're going to get it done. So why don't you take the next part?
So, we always like to get to know our guests a little bit better. We always ask them what charitable organizations they're involved with. And you're involved with something that I'm extremely passionate about, too. We got a lot of mutual contacts, which was interesting because I didn't know that before you came on the show. But can you talk to us a little bit about your charitable
work? Yeah, so I'm a pastor at Lakewood Church and run a ministry called Stephen Ministry, which is really helping people in crisis. And a couple of years ago, I went through a leadership program called the Center for Houston's Future. And really, they kind of take you through the history of Houston, teach you about the region, talk about some of the issues facing our region. And then you kind of pick one of the issues and spend 6 weeks learning about it and then come back and kind of do a report out on what you learned. The issue I picked was human trafficking. So about 2.5 years ago, I didn't know anything about it. And it's kind of funny now because people say I'm an expert. And I'm like, well, if it takes you 2 years to be an expert, okay. But, you know, I think part of it is just having a willing heart and being passionate about the issue. Because it is a big issue in our region. And it's really a humanitarian issue, like, you know, labor trafficking, sex trafficking. People think there are a lot of Starbucks in Houston, like there's one on every corner. But the truth is there's three times as many locations that are trafficking people in Houston. And the city is doing a great job. My friend Meenal Patel Davis, who works for the mayor, Houston's recognized globally for what we're doing here and really trying to combat it. So I'm really proud of our city and our region for what we're doing. We recognize the importance of it. The churches are really starting to recognize the importance of us changing the culture to really eradicate this issue. I was at a meeting yesterday with the Freedom Church Alliance, and it's a group of churches that have gotten together and said, hey, this is a big enough issue that we, the body of Christ, we, the churches, need to work together to help solve this. And that's awesome when you can start talking about the Methodists and the Catholics and the Protestants and the Baptists all holding hands and working on something together. Because the truth
is... That's unbelievable.
No, it is, it's right? So powerful. And the funny thing about it is we agree on more than what we disagree on.
Oh, we did the same thing during Harvey. I mean, I saw... Yeah. It didn't matter, you know, what denomination you were from. I saw the church as a whole reaching out to the Hill community.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. I love seeing that.
Well, and if you take those two, we're talking about a crisis event, and for lack of a better term, it makes it sound like this seems to be like it's a crisis event.
It is. It really is. No, it really is.
I have
it's actually a pandemic. Right. That's what most people don't realize. I mean, it's not just a Houston problem. It is a global problem.
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah.
And to put it in context, if human trafficking was a company, it's as big as Ford Motor Company globally, like one of the top 30 companies in the world. That's how big this problem is.
Unimaginable.
And we're not associating Ford with anything.
Right. No, exactly. But just the size purely an example. Company, right? But right. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was shocked. I have a guy who in the same space, his ministry, and he's in our backyard in the city that I live in. And I'm in the suburbs, you know, meaning, you know, we chose to live in the suburbs for a reason. We wanted to be away, you know, in an area with less crime, better schools, et cetera. So we and I think when we think about these things happening, we're envisioning them happening in the deepest, darkest corners. And this guy showed me places that were under investigation that he was, I guess, you know, staking out and trying to get recon on that were within 2 minutes of where I dropped my daughter off at school. Well, yeah. Where, you know, and so... Again, it's just I'm glad that you're championing it, and I think it'd be hard for anybody not to have a passion for it. But again, Freedom Church Alliance is the organization you got together with. And then, is there another link or any other information that they could go to?
Yeah, sure. It's freedomchurchalliance.org, and on the website there, they actually have training kind of once a week, different parts of the city in Sugar Land, Kingwood. Central Houston, and you can go learn more about this issue.
Fantastic.
Some folks from the FBI come and other entities around the area and talk about it. And it's common sense stuff. Like, you know, you drive down, you go by the strip mall, right? And you see the place with the reflective mirroring window, right? I mean, come on, a legitimate massage parlor, you can see into it.
Right.
The one that's got the reflective window, you know, there's nothing good happening there. Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Right? Right. Yeah. And it's like simple stuff, like wives and women and, you know, some other folks, I suppose, that go in. And, you know, I like to get a manicure or a pedicure once a year, maybe.
Judgment. No violations.
So, but when the cameras are facing in instead of out, are they watching?
Right.
Right? So now you got to start thinking about what's really going on here.
Right.
Because it's an indicator of potentially people being labor trafficked.
Jason and I actually were at an event last night, and Reflective Media put out they're putting out a PSA, and it's called hashtag get nosy. And they're encouraging parents to you need to know who your kids are talking to on their phones.
Yeah.
Whether that's through Snapchat, texting, you know, whatever social media apps. And I was made aware that I didn't even know this, but there's actually hidden apps one of those like a calculator app, and you have to push in the right numbers, and then you can open up other apps.
Wow.
Didn't even know about that.
Wow.
About that through Crime Stoppers. And Crime Stoppers actually host meetings about that, so if parents want to get involved and learn more about those type of things, they can, and that is a huge prevention tool, right?
I mean, yeah.
Our number one job as parents, more than anything else, is to protect our children.
Amen.
So,
well,
sorry, soapbox.
Hey, you know what?
We're
going to get on a soapbox, and it's about making an impact and taking care of our kids, and so be it. But, again, humbled to be in the presence of someone with the passion to serve and do those things. So we're grateful for that opportunity. That's a great point to, I guess, transition into a couple of things as we close out the show. But specifically, I mean, just hearing your story, I already know there's things that have led to your success. I mean, that are going to go without saying. But share with us a little bit about what you would attribute are some key things that have gotten you to where you're at and have helped you help form the leader and the man that you are.
You know, I always tell people this story when they say, how did you get to where you are? I was in the military for 7 years and was really successful and enjoyed my time there, learned a lot of things. But when I came out, I kind of came out with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because, you know, you're 19, 20, 21 years old. You got a couple hundred people working for you. The decisions that you're making are life or death decisions, right? Like if you make the wrong decision, people die. And you just kind of act like you own everything because you do when you're at that level. Like you own, like you're responsible for these people's lives.
Right.
And one day, Sarah Green, she pulled me in. She was my boss. She pulled me in her office and she said, "Bruce, you're kind of a jerk." I'm like, "What?" Like, you know, you don't know until somebody tells you.
Right.
And it changed the course of my career. It changed my life because here's a person who cared enough about me to tell me.
Wow.
And that's a lesson that I've never forgotten is care enough about the people that work for you, that work around you, and tell them. Because a lot of times we have blind spots and we don't know. And it was a huge blind spot that I had. Because I would just speak in fact, like, well, this is the way it is. And that didn't really translate so well to the non-military world. But, you know, she cared enough to tell me. And that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned. And not only that, but, you know, people make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we handle that when people do? I was on an aircraft carrier. And we had just come out of the shipyards, and we were getting ready to go back out. And I was filling up a tank on this aircraft carrier. I worked in the engine room, and we didn't get to see the sun much, but, hey, it was cool being on an aircraft carrier. But I was filling up this tank, and during the shipyard period, they had put a blank flange on this tank. So the relief valve was blocked off. So if you overpressurized this tank, the tank was going to blow up. Well, little did I know that they had blank flanged it. And we're filling up this tank. And all of a sudden, I hear the alarms going off. And they're like, flooding, 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 flooding in this compartment. I'm like, oh, shoot. That's right there. I think I did that. And it was millions of dollars worth of damage. And we delayed the departure of a ship going on a 6-month cruise. Like the president knew about it.
Wow.
Oops. And, you know,
so you're notorious,
right? You know,
wow.
but the lesson I learned from that though is like, I had done a lot of good things on the ship, right? And captain of the ship go up to his stateroom, knock on the door. And, he said, "Did you learn anything?" "Yes, sir, you've done a lot of good things. One offshoot isn't going to mess up your career. Learn from it, don't do it again."
Wow.
Wow.
And I mean, you're talking about an aircraft
right.
carrier deployment, the president knows. Thank God he didn't know my name, but.
That's unbelievable.
But, you know.
Like, I changed the printer wrong once. I put the cartridge in wrong, and like I set us back like, you know, a couple of documents. It's like, you know, I got a DAR, like a corrective action. You know, like, hey, dude, you can't fix a freaking printer. Holy moly,
but,
Bruce.
You know, it's you know, and we talked a little bit about the church, right?
But, yeah.
You know, do we walk that out? As men of faith, as women of faith, as people of faith, you know, when bad things happen, how do we handle it? Ooh. And what kind of grace do we show? And because, you know, nobody nobody comes to work wanting to get fired or make mistakes, right?
Right.
No one does that. So, you know, I think we can do it. The lesson I learned from that is show grace. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, between these two events, they really form my philosophies about leadership and how you help people and how you mentor people and grow people. And really just, you know, not being afraid to take chances and as a leader, allowing your people to make mistakes. Because if organizations are paralyzed and they're afraid to make mistakes, what are we really doing? If we only make decisions that are 100% chance of success, good God help us.
Wow.
I think Colin Powell said it once. Once you get 70% of the information, head in a direction. You can change the course as you go along, but do something.
Right.
Right? We can't be, what is it, paralysis by analysis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, let's go in a direction. And I think when you create an environment that allows people to make mistakes and show some grace when it happens, and you care about your people, and you say, hey, did you know that you have this blind spot? Or did you know that you need to work on this? Dude, you're equipping people to be better employees, to be better future leaders. And you change the culture.
That was a gift, what you just said. So I think that for our audience, we always get these, I think, you know, there's every episode, there's a signature moment, whether it be around leadership or people's passion, or sometimes it's just phenomenal education about the processes and the systems that are happening across here. You did a phenomenal job of talking about all of those great things, but just that snippet on leadership, I hope everybody tunes in long enough to catch that part because it was gold.
Thank you.
Yeah, really, really appreciative. And also just your passion for the Freedom Church Alliance and the work that you guys are doing against human trafficking. So we're grateful to have you. I'm going to close out with, you know, attitude of gratitude. I'll turn it over to Clint. We'll let you go first, and then I'll wrap up mine, and Bruce can share what he's grateful for.
You know, I'm really grateful that we live in an age where resources are available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, my parents did the best they could with what they had, and they didn't have the resources that we have. So being able to find information, being able to get in contact with people that have expertise in areas that we don't, and being able to recognize those weaknesses when we have them, I'm just grateful that we have those resources today.
I'm grateful for really people like Bruce. I mean, I think it's and not just from the work perspective, but peeling it off from people who, I mean, to me, it feels like that to run a Stevens ministry for a church that big, spend your time doing human trafficking, those aren't like a couple hour a week ventures. You know, those are things that people have to make a decision that they're going to give up certain aspects of their life, and other people aren't going to step out in the field. They're not going to go make an impact. They're going to oftentimes get sucked into the vortex of scrolling and tweeting and texting this and then that and sitting on the couch doing all that stuff. And then there's people who are in the battlefield every day making an impact. And so warriors that are out there changing lives and helping serve. I'm just thankful for all of the folks that are in those chairs and out in the streets making impacts. And thank you so much for that.
No, thank you. You know, honestly, I'm grateful to live in Houston because my son was 13.8 ounces when he was born. Can't Coke.
Wow.
If he had been born anywhere else, he wouldn't be here. And now he's 8. And, you know, so just that alone, right? Like, you're in this amazing medical center. And the diversity of Houston, like, we are the most diverse city in the U.S. And my wife's from Trinidad, and just the diversity of this region, you know, being a pastor on Lakewood Church and running a ministry last weekend, I got the honor of serving during baptism. We baptized 803 people.
Wow. Oh, God.
And
that's insane.
The first 15 people were special needs. And, you know, I went home and cried, man. Like, to see people's lives changed and have the opportunity to witness that. I mean, to see one person's life change is amazing. But to watch 800 people come through and stand in water for 4 hours. And
4 hours.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, that's amazing.
It's, but, you know.
I bet you can't even, I bet your mind can't even get wrapped around the amount of time that you're there. But when you get out, it's like gone.
No.
I mean, I bet you're like, that was 4 hours?
No, it's amazing. Like, wow. And I've just been so fortunate to be surrounded by great leaders. Dennis Scythe, who was the CEO of INEOS when we were going through everything that we went through with our son in the hospital. He was just so gracious with my time. And, you know, watching somebody like Pastor Joel Osteen, who was in Philadelphia the night before doing a Night of Hope, getting on a plane, flying back to Houston, getting into Houston, getting in a pool for 4 hours, a little over 4 hours actually, finishing at 5 o'clock, eating, showering, changing, getting on a stage for 7 Saturday night, and then coming back twice on Sunday. Like, when you see somebody like that, it's like, well, you know, am I doing enough? Because look at this guy, look at what he's doing. And you know, when you talk about you're doing these things, well, you know, I'm surrounded by people that are doing these things. And we talked a little bit about David Reed and Tim Sensenine, right? When National Oil Developer Arco, he's the CMO, David is, and he's out on a board of a nonprofit and trying to raise money. And like, you see these people around you and you're like, you know what? I always tell people, just who's watching this show right now, right? Like, there's this whole Kevin Bacon 7 degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm.
Just the people that are watching this show right now, there's enough people to end human trafficking around the globe. Just with who's watching. Because we all know somebody who knows somebody, and we can change the world with who's just watching here right now.
Wow.
And when you think about it, man, that's our, we all want to make an impact. We all want to leave a mark. We all want to leave a legacy. So what's your legacy? What are you working on? What are you doing? And I heard someone say one time, you are what's on your calendar. Who you want to be is what's on your calendar. Well, what are you making time for, right? What are you putting on your schedule? Because that reflects what you want to be. And if all that's on your schedule is where you are, you're just going to be where you are. If you want to be a pilot, put pilot lessons on your calendar. If you want to be a pastor, put whatever on your calendar. If you want to go to grad school, put it on your calendar, because until you do it, it ain't going to happen. So who you want to be is what's on your schedule.
Great. Second gift. Bonus
My
gift.
Gosh. Right? Holy moly.
Yeah,
I've got like posts for days on this. This is going to be unbelievable. So I'm all like teary-eyed and like emotional right now. I don't think I've hugged a guest yet. But it's happening. Just get ready.
Now you can go all TD Jacks right
now.
Get ready.
All right, everybody get ready. All right. So we want to thank you guys. What an amazing show. What a blessing. What a gift it's been. We just had some phenomenal guests today in our lineup, and we keep picking a momentum with the Gulf Coast Growth Show. We're thankful for the Economic Alliance, our audience, the folks that tune in. As always, you can reach out to Bruce. Man, you can connect with him through the port, through his foundations. I'm sure he's easy to find. And I know when I stalked him, he was easy to find. So it's not hard to track him down. Get out to him and reach out to him and see where you can add some value. Same time, you can always reach out to myself, Clint, via LinkedIn, any Absolutely. Of our social yeah. channels, and the team here at the Economic Alliance, their marketing department, if you want to give us feedback, guest suggestions, or anything else that you have. Thanks a lot. You guys have a great day.
Thank you.